Emma Kent.
And I'm Derek Russell, and this is The Memo,
a podcast of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and djournal.com. Good Wednesday afternoon, and welcome to The Memo. It's November 29th. I'm Emma Kent, and I'm here with Chris Kiefer filling in for Derek Russell today. Chris?
Hello.
What's up?
Hey, so, it's Christmas season in full swing now.
I know the Christmas parade is on Friday.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
It seems early, but I guess it's always that time. But
it's always the first weekend in December,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
So are you guys going to go watch it?
Yeah, Deanna will be in it with the band, so
oh,
she'll
cool.
be there. So yeah, I'll have the boys. And yeah, it should be good. I know a lot of years it's kind of, well, when they were little, it would kind of be cold and be in that night. But I think they're old enough and it's early enough that, yeah, I'd imagine we'll go watch it somewhere.
Yeah. I don't think it's supposed to be too cold.
Yeah.
On Friday night anyway, so.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. It's supposed to be today is a high of 70.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll cool back down. But that's crazy.
Yeah. It should be good weather. I'm excited because it's... We're just going to walk from our new house right over
there
to Jefferson
yeah.
Street and watch it and then just walk on home. We're excited about doing
that.
Nice. So.
Congratulations on the new house. It's official now.
It's official.
Y'all are in.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
it's good to have that done and ready for Christmas now.
Right. Is it already decorated for Christmas?
No. I have the big bin out that says Christmas on it.
There you go.
But there's so much other stuff in the house that there's no room really to decorate yet. I'm kind of trying to still figure out where to put things. So maybe this weekend I'll make some headway, and I don't know if I can, I think we'll probably get a Christmas tree this weekend. I don't know if Jacob can wait much longer. He's
right,
so excited.
Right. Yeah.
He's been wanting to get a tree for weeks. So
I have to wait till he got in the house.
Yeah, but we know where it's going to go, so we're like, we're ready for that. I feel like if I just get the Christmas tree up and decorated, I'll feel better about the state of the rest of the house.
That's
maybe.
All you need. Just hang a wreath from one of the boxes.
Yeah. So
wrap some tinsel around a box.
Wrap some string lights around all of the clutter and just call it Christmas.
That's
so.
It.
Yeah. What about y'all? Are y'all decorated?
Yeah, we're decorated the day after Thanksgiving. Deanna had it decorated.
That's when I like to do it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. I make her wait till the day after Thanksgiving. Sometimes she wants to do it before we go down. She'll be there when we get back. But
well, I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The day after Thanksgiving is traditionally, you go get your tree or unpack your fake tree. The worst thing about the fake tree was always like waiting or fluffing the branches. Like when you take it out.
Yeah.
Because we would get it. Because I had one growing up and we would get it out of the box and then we would want to immediately decorate it. But my mom would be like,
Wait,
no, we have to fluff the branches, and it took forever, and you just sat there, and you're like, this isn't any fun. And so, I mean, I guess with a real one, you have to let the branches fall for a little while before you can start to hang things on it, but...
I don't know that we've properly fluffed the branches. Deanna did it while I was at work, so I'll have to ask her, but... We might just not have fluffy branches on our tree.
Well, you kind of, you know, you have to pack it up, and you kind of have to pull them all apart
make
it
that.
Sort of look...
Like a tree.
Like a tree again.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes some time. So, is y'all's pre-lit? Does it have the...
It's got the lights on
that's
it already.
Nice.
So, yeah.
The worst part is the lights.
That helps. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I remember that from growing up. It was not our... We had not our official growing up, but it was not pre-lit.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it forever.
It's always... Anything that comes before putting the ornaments on is always just like... I don't know.
I'm
impatient.
Waste time.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, all right. Well, Derek Russell will be back for our weekend show, but he is not here today, sadly.
Yep.
But that's okay, because we've still got a good show. We've got Jenna Parsons. He's going to talk about her story about the bookmobile, the Lee County bookmobile.
Yeah, it's the only one that's been operating for 75 years, just had its 75th anniversary, but I thought this was interesting. It's one of only two bookmobiles in the state.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a long time.
I mean,
75 years.
Yeah, it is.
That's really cool.
I'm curious, we'll ask her, I know when she comes on, but who uses the bookmobile and how does it get used and what's the purpose? And it'd be interesting.
Yeah, so we'll talk to Jenna about that, and we'll talk to Dennis Sid about his story about the Cockerell Banana Company, local business here in Tupelo, longtime local business.
Yeah, and does more than bananas, which I never knew until I read a story.
Yes, they do. Yeah, I didn't know that until recently.
Yeah.
Either, which is kind of interesting. And then we'll talk about the new storm shelter and gymnasium at Tupelo High School.
Yeah, bring you on.
Yeah, so let's get to it. Jenna Parsons here to tell us about the bookmobile from the Lee County Library. Jenna, you wrote a nice big story about the bookmobile that was in this past Sunday's paper, and it just celebrated its 75th anniversary.
It did. Actually, I was in the library one day checking out a book. I still go in there once or twice a week. And there was the ladies at the desk were talking about food. They were talking about what someone had brought for lunch that day and what somebody was cooking for dinner that night. And so I listened to the conversation for a minute, and the main woman who was speaking, Barbara Carruthers, I said, "It sounds to me like you need to be a cook of the week." And all the other ladies were like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, she needs to be." And she's like, "No, no, no, I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to do a story about, you know, be the cook of the week." And then one of the other ladies said, "Get her to talk about the bookmobile." And I said, "Well, would you talk about the bookmobile?" And she said, "Oh, now that's my heart. I'll talk about the bookmobile." And so as we went on to set up the story, it just turned out that it's celebrating its 75th anniversary this year. I mean, I wasn't even looking for a news peg. I just thought it was a neat story, and that rolling library is still going strong 75 years later.
Yeah, that's a long time to have the bookmobile going. I didn't realize it was that old.
It's the longest continuous running bookmobile in the state. And the only other community that still has a bookmobile, according to Barbara Carruthers, is Oxford.
Oh, wow.
Were there more? Were there a lot more? Do you know, like...
There were. In looking back at the history of it, because if you think about it, this bookmobile started in 1942. I mean, that's the middle of World War II. And nobody had cars, you know, or if you did have a car, you were sort of a wealthy family, and you only had one. Everybody didn't have a car. And so you couldn't, you know, to get to the library came to you. And I actually read that the heyday of the bookmobile, right now, Barbara says her circulation is about 9,000. In the 1950s, the circulation was, I want to say, 200,000. Because that's all people. It may have been 100,000, but I'm almost certain I saw 200,000. Wow. And that was just the height of its popularity. And then as we got into the 60s, more people are getting cars, and the bookmobile just wasn't as practical for people anymore. They could drive to the library if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. But it still has a service for rural communities, serves several in Lee County, Plantersville and Verona, Shannon, Moorville. And then it goes to schools, too, and that's really cool for kids to be able to get on board and have Barbara read to them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I've seen it before, is at some schools, that, you know, it comes up and the kids get all excited and come on, and it's just really neat.
Well, it's more than books now. You know, imagine when I was a kid and when you were kids, it was all books, but now they have DVDs that kids can check out. And what do they call those? Graphic novels. That's really popular right now. I don't care for them, but if that encourages a kid to read, I'm all about it.
So how many books can they fit into the bookmobile?
I've forgotten what I quoted. Is it 2,000 that she has in there? And she changes them out regularly and keeps mostly recent books on there. Do you see that number, Chris? Does it say 2,000?
See, here it is. 1,000 books and more than 200 DVDs.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
All right. But she has made a real connection with the people, and she talks about when she goes into these communities, she learns all the gossip and who's going where and doing what with whom. And then she has a program for inbound, and they're slowly phasing that out. She has 6 people that she still actually goes to their homes once a month. She knows what they want to read, and she takes them books. And one of her patrons, not one of the 6, obviously, but one of the ones she had before, one of the last of the inbound, passed away. And so she drove the bookmobile to his funeral and parked it there. And his family said he would have loved that.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
But she does. She has a connection. And she, Barbara, was a bookmobile patron when she was a little girl growing up in Shannon. And she said there is nothing like having the bookmobile lady put a book in your hand, your favorite author, and put that book in your hand and say, I've been saving this for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so she tries to do that for her patrons.
It makes the library so much more personal.
It does. It does. That's different than the brick and mortar.
Right.
That's where the bookmobile is different. It's more personal.
Yeah. It's kind of like it sounds almost like a book club. Like you kind of are, you know, you get to talk about the book and sort of share that with the driver. So,
and she gets to introduce kids to great authors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she can recommend books or read to them. You know, when she has that reading time inside the bookmobile, she gets to choose. And so she can read some of the better books that for kids.
Well, all right. Well, thanks, Jenna, for telling us a little more about the bookmobile.
Thank you.
If you like sports, don't forget to look for the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with Brad Locke and Dalton Middleton. New episodes air every Wednesday, and you can listen for free in iTunes, podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans can check out the Double Coverage podcast. Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and MSU reporter Logan Lowry release a new episode each Thursday afternoon in which they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and Rebels. Listen to it for free in iTunes, podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com.
Lots to talk about on both of those podcasts right now. The Prep Rally, I guess, will be out later this afternoon, and I'm sure they'll be talking about the high school football state championships that are this weekend. We've got two Northeast Mississippi schools, West Point and Starkville are both still playing. And then, obviously the, Double Coverage guys will be talking about new coaches at both schools, and a lot of kind of how those hirings went down and everything. So I know that will be a fascinating listen. And if you like murder mysteries, be sure to listen to the Daily Journal's newest podcast, Open, The Case of Lee Ochi. Featuring Emma taking a fresh look at the unsolved disappearance of a 13-year-old Tupelo girl from 25 years ago. That includes a potentially overlooked witness and a person of interest in the case that police have never spoken about publicly. The 6-episode investigative serial podcast is available in iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and a variety of podcast apps, or stream it from our website, djournal.com/openpodcast. We've now got Dennis Sid to talk about the Cockrell Banana Company.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Oh, just fine.
Good. So Cockrell Bananas, obviously, as you said, I thought your lead is great because I can totally relate. You've seen the yellow and red trucks, you know, all over the streets and highways of Northeast Mississippi. But what made your story interesting to me is I think a lot of people, again, see the trucks but don't really know what it's all about. I never knew that they're more than bananas.
Exactly, more than bananas. They distribute, you know, fresh produce across a pretty wide swath of territory to not only grocery stores, but convenience stores, small mom-and-pop stores, schools, churches, caterers, basically whoever needs, you know, fresh produce. And they're pretty busy operation. They're small in that there's only about 25 employees, but they have 11 trucks. They've been around since 1930, and they've been sort of a staple, you know, for those who know about them. And, you know, it's a family-owned, family-run, been that way since 1930.
Tell the history of it, first of all. You said 1930. It did literally start for bananas at a time when it was hard to get bananas up here, correct?
Right. Earl Cockrell, Well, bananas at the time they were available, but they were sort of cost prohibitive because, you know, stores had to, you know, ship them in and it was quite expensive. So he thought, well, why don't I bring the product up here and resell it as a distributor, you know, instead of grocery stores or whatever having to go down individually and order it that way. So he sort of became a middleman. So the legacy has it that he went down there in his first trip and he roll back up on a boxcar full of bananas and just start selling bananas from out of the boxcar. And as the business grew, you know, they started shooting. They said, hey, we'll just go ahead and ship the boxcars up to you instead of you having to come down.
Mm-hmm.
And then that eventually led to folks going, hey, since you can get bananas, why don't can we get other fruits and veggies? And so that's the creation of Cockrell Banana.
They thought about changing the name, but...
Yeah, apparently Mr. Earl had changed it one year to Cockrell Produce, but, you know, sort of like branding, you know, after a while it's like, it's Cockrell Banana. You know, we're known as Cockrell Banana, and over the years they've thought about changing it, but they, stick with what people know, cockerel banana. You know, I guess in parentheses you can say, and other stuff.
So what is that other stuff? You said they get a lot of stuff from California?
Yeah, mostly? You know, lettuce, cucumbers, you know, California produces, what, about 60-70% of the fresh produce in the U.S., so they have to get shipments from out there at least twice a week they get it. And then from there, you know, they distribute through their trucks, you know, 6 days a week.
And it's a mixture of, you said they are distributors for a lot of local businesses, and I forget what the area you had it in your story, how far it goes.
As far as Savannah, Tennessee to the north.
I think Oxford, you said?
Oxford to the west, Russellville, Alabama to the east, and down to West Point, maybe.
Okay.
Not sure. But it's a lot. Hundreds of accounts.
Grocery stores, restaurants, too?
Yeah. Schools, caterers, but all that. There was deemed a second-tier supplier, not in that, for example, Kroger and Walmart have their own suppliers, their tier one suppliers. But in a pinch, if they run out of things, they can call Cockrell and say, hey, can you deliver whatever? And they're able to do that, too.
And you can also... coming off the street.
Yeah, they're open to the public. And a lot of people assume that they're, because they're a wholesaler, that's strictly it. But they've been public the whole time. You can go in, they'll make fruit baskets for you. This is the time of year when people like to give out fruit baskets for the holidays. Mm-hmm. And you might have some ideas, and they'll put it together. And then some people just walk off the street and say, hey, I need a hand of bananas or a couple of oranges. And in the story, one gentleman in there comes there at least twice a week, gets, you know, some bananas and two apples, I think. You know, just, they make them happy. You know, you can buy as many as you want or as little as you want. You don't have to buy it by the case, yeah, or crate or whatever like that.
Do they have a storefront?
No, not really. I mean, it's strictly warehouse. I mean, you can go in and there's a sort of a little office area, and then you have all the warehouse space. But, you know, they'll drive by the office and they'll get you fixed up.
Is it any cheaper or fresher, or, you know, are there advantages of getting it directly from them rather than secondhand through a store?
It's probably as fresh as you can get because it's, you know, from the trucks to there, and then, you know, from there they'll deliver. I mean, it's still pretty fresh at the grocery store, but if you want as almost as fresh as you can, I mean, go there directly.
Are there, as businesses change and models change, you know, they've been around since the 30s, is this still a successful model, or are they facing, you know, unique pressures, as, you know, we've talked before about how all the grocery store wars and everything else?
I guess any business will tell you everything's fine. And, you know, they've made a big social media push on Facebook. And
yeah, but like with Amazon now folks, coming in. Yeah. And
yeah, I don't think Amazon's delivering fruit anywhere that I know of. I think, you know, they have their own little niche right now. And I think, you know, there are fewer wholesale distributors like them, you know, delivering fresh fruit and vegetables like that. But, you know, get it while you can. So.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Well, thanks, Dennis. And kind of like I said, it's, you know, one of those things you always see and don't really know a lot about. So appreciate you informing us on cockerel bananas.
Watch the Daily Journal's Capital View webcast every Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capital Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. You can watch live on Monday afternoons at 2 p.m. or catch the replay later in the day.
Wake up and get ready for your day with the Daily Journal's News Break, a quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else in Northeast Mississippi in a five-minute video. Shows are posted every Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. You can watch them free at any time at djournal.com. Facebook, YouTube, or the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple and Android devices. And now, let's talk about storm shelters. I feel like you've written a lot about storm shelters.
I have written so many stories about storm shelters.
During your time on the education beat?
I have. I swear, maybe once a month.
Storm shelters, band. You've got these common topics that,
lots of things.
That you become an expert in.
Oh, yeah. I could tell you a lot about.
Well, so storm shelters, and I guess the reason is, as you wrote about in your story on Monday, you were at it. They had the groundbreaking for for the new storm shelter and gym at Tupelo High School. And I guess there's been a lot of, simply there's probably, I'm sure there's more buzz about that than the other ones. But as you wrote in that story, that's kind of been a goal for the district over the last few years, is adding storm shelters. And so that's why there's been so many to write about.
Yeah. So their ultimate goal is to have, is to have a shelter on every campus, or that can serve every campus. There are some campuses, and this wasn't in the story, but like Pierce Street Elementary School and Tupelo Middle School are so close together that, mm-hmm. you know, they might build a larger shelter
that can have us both,
that could serve both of those schools. But so their goal is to have a shelter, a FEMA grade storm shelter that could serve each school, in the district, so that in the event of severe weather, they have a quick place to get students and teachers and to have them safe, mm-hmm. In the event of a tornado or whatever. So,
which they learned in
When it happened
in real life fashion, I guess.
Right. And I wasn't here when that happened, but you know, you hear them talk about it and you were here for that. But, we had the tornado come through Tupelo in 2014, in April, and it hit the Joyner area pretty hard and damaged Joyner Elementary School over mm-hmm. there. And so, Tupelo Superintendent Gerald Loden said, you know, we had been talking about this. We knew we wanted to get storm shelters on these campuses. But it was more of a long-term plan, more long range, wasn't something that we were ready to jump on mm-hmm. quite yet. But then after that happened, they sort of shifted their priorities, sort of having experienced that firsthand.
Sure.
And it became a more immediate priority for them. So, yeah.
This is the fourth that they're starting on, correct?
This is the fourth one. They have one at Thomas Street Elementary. They have one at Joyner. And then they have one at Carver. And the one at Carver isn't done yet, but it's pretty close to being done.
The other two are.
Joyner and Thomas Street are done. Carver is under construction, but should be done soon. And then this one, of course, they just broke ground on this week. But it is really significant because it's the largest one, because Tupelo High School has so many students mm-hmm. and faculty, and they need so much space. But it's the most costly of all of them. I think it's 6.2 million or 6.3, I can't remember, but it's a little over $6 million mm-hmm. will be the total cost. And it's also going to double as a new gymnasium, you know, indoor athletic facility for the high school. So they're kind of killing two birds with one stone with this project.
Yeah, I know they had talked for years about the need for a new gym anyway, I guess, before mm-hmm. this, because the current gym's capacity is a little bit less than the full student body. So when they have a full basketball game or events, like the one I know they would talk about a lot is the Black History Program, is one of the events where they have the whole student body there at one time. And that, I think the fire marshal kind of allowed them to do it. But technically they have more people in there than they really wanted to. And so I guess they had this need. And so now, like you said, it allows them to combine
two
projects.
And, you know, the FEMA pays for part of the project with a grant. And so I think the cost of the district is somewhere around $4 million, and then FEMA will cover the rest. And then the shelter, the money that they sort of save it, you know, sort of tuck it away for these shelters. Mm-hmm. It's usually left over from other bond projects.
Okay.
If something comes in under budget, they'll take the extra money and sort of sock it away. And use that to put toward these projects. So, and at the groundbreaking, this one felt more significant in that it's such a large project, but also Dr. Loden said, you know, the other ones are smaller shelters or smaller projects. You know, we knew we could do those, he said, but this was always a challenge. We never thought we would have enough funds to mm-hmm. do this. So it was a big deal.
Because the other ones, FEMA is paying like 90%, mm-hmm. 85% of the cost, right? Whereas this one, Tupelo, is paying, I think what was FEMA's paying 2.1 and Tupelo's paying 4.1 maybe. Mm-hmm. But Tupelo's paying twice as much, I guess, as FEMA is. And that's because of, I guess, FEMA will give you basically just the basic building, which worked for what the elementary schools needed. And I guess the extra cost here is all the
athletic stuff.
And yeah.
So it's a big deal. It was a big deal. Lots of people turned out at the groundbreaking. There were, of course, elected officials and school officials, and they had some students out there. And so I think they're very proud to be doing this. It's been in the works for several years. All the paperwork they've had to do, the designing and redesigning the plans. I mean, it's a lot you have to do to get to this point.
Sure, especially get the FEMA funding.
Right.
Right.
So it's been a long time coming. And so I think they were really thrilled.
I bet.
To be at this point to say, okay, we're going to do this. And here we are breaking ground. So
another thing I thought was interesting about this one from your story the other day is it can be used as a command post potentially by the mm-hmm. city of Tupelo.
Yeah. It'll be equipped with a generator.
Wow.
That, I forgot how long it can go for, but it's like a really big generator, you mm-hmm. know? So, and in the event, you know, if the city needed like an emergency sort of command center where they could get everybody together, and sort of operate the emergency services, if something were to happen to their facilities sure. or whatever, this structure, the gym shelter, will be equipped to sort of serve as a command center for them.
Because so of how large it'll be, yeah.
How large, and it'll be, you know, if utilities are out, it can still run. It'll be equipped to run utilities and things mm-hmm, that they'll need mm-hmm. to communicate and to operate. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, no, that is. Yeah, it again, another purpose for it. What has kind of been, it seems to me, just based on Twitter and social media and whatnot, that there's a little bit of a buzz about this building. I mean, it's going to look different than a traditional gym, mm-hmm. being that it'll be a dome. I know those have become a little bit, Aberdeen, I think, always had one from what I've heard. They become a little more common. I remember Smithville added one after the tornado there. And, you know, as you kind of look at the dual purpose, but, you know, it'll look different than the current Tupelo gym. Is there a lot of buzz? Are people kind of excited about this new gym and the aesthetics of it and whatnot?
I think so. I mean, it's going to be really nice because it's going to be new.
Sure.
And I think it'll be sort of a point of pride for the district when you have, athletic teams, basketball teams, volleyball visiting and mm-hmm. they have this nice facility. The renderings that I've seen it looks really cool. I mean, it looks kind of collegiate really.
It does. Right. I thought the same thing.
And I talked to some students who were there at the groundbreaking and they all were excited about it. Some of them were seniors and they were like, well, we're excited for the school, but we wish that we would get to use it. You know, they were, I think one of them was a basketball player but there seems to be a lot of buzz about it. And another thing is they haven't built a new building on that campus in like 25 years.
I saw that in your story. That was interesting. So, I hadn't known that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like this is the first big construction project on that campus sure. in a while. So I think that's another reason that there's a lot of buzz about it.
Yeah, I bet. That's cool. So what's next in terms of storm shelters? I know, tell me if this is right. I know initially when I was on the beat and they would talk about these long term, there were some buildings, I would guess probably Lawndale and Parkway, the two newest schools, that in those schools, maybe they had done something, built the ceilings and the roofs out of concrete. So they mm-hmm. have, even though they don't have a storm shelter, they're a little bit safer. So I guess those are maybe lower priorities, kind of. What's next and how close are they to getting more of these?
Yeah, so with those buildings, they are a little safer. But my understanding is that it's still not enough space for everyone.
Sure.
Which is why I think that they did the other elementary schools first.
Sure, bigger priority.
So FEMA operates, they have windows of time where they're giving grants. Mm-hmm. So you can only apply for grants during these windows. And so they're basically just waiting. They said they've got the paperwork, you know, ready and they're prepared to apply for more grants for more shelters. They're just waiting for another window. And then they'll just keep on going.
Yeah.
I know they've talked before about, you know, some places will be kind of challenging as far as a location.
Sure.
Milam in particular.
Yeah, right. There's not a lot of extra land.
There's not a
right
lot of extra space around there. And so there will be some things like that, challenges. But, you know, the plan is to keep applying for the grant money and just keep going. And,
sure.
You know, they earmark funds and kind of save those so that when they do get the green light, they can keep moving along. So.
Have the rest for it, sure. Do they have a plan on who's next, or at least if they've said publicly?
No, I mean, I think the plan is to apply for all of the remaining schools in
at
the next
once.
Window, and
yeah.
then whatever comes back. I mean, they may not get all of them approved, mm-hmm. or there might not be enough grant money to go around for all of them, but just sort of whatever shakes out, and then they'll just do those
go
and
from there.
Apply,
sure.
And it's kind of a long process.
Interesting, so.
Yeah.
So, to be continued.
Well, yeah, we're going to see a lot more domed buildings around town, so.
All right, well, I guess that does it for another podcast.
Yeah, we'll be back to talk about arts and entertainment and such on Friday. I'm really excited to talk to Scott Morris about Coco.
Coco, yeah.
Did you see it?
I didn't, but the kids
did.
Yeah. They went in Jackson for Thanksgiving the day before I went down. The day mm-hmm. before I got down there on Wednesday, they went to watch it.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard good things, so yeah. I'm interested to
Daniel
hear more
liked
about it.
Daniel liked it, probably like Frozen, mm-hmm. the Frozen movie that came on before it, because, you know, there's a...
Right, there's the
first
short.
First you got to watch, yeah. But my understanding is it wasn't a short. Her dad said it was 45 minutes. Deanna said it was 20. I think it's probably closer to 20, but I understand it's pretty long, and long enough that as soon as the opening credits on Coco started, Joseph fell asleep and slept the whole movie, so he got a, whatever it was, $10, $12 nap. But,
he'll catch it when it comes to DVD.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I think they liked it. I understand that Scott liked it a lot, so he'll talk about that more.
Yeah, I'm looking
Friday.
Forward to hearing about that. So you can catch us on Friday again and online at memo.djournal.com, on Twitter at djournalmemo. And I think that's it for today.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you on Friday.